Sam Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Once a month, always on a Monday, he's here. We've been doing these programs for a long time with the hope that we could help you out if you have some sort of problem around the house, something needs to be repaired, you're thinking about making some changes, doing some remodeling. Hank knows a lot about the single-family home, and so if the problem has to do with windows and doors or gutters or roofing or insulation or siding or basement or attic, I won't go on. You get the idea. All you have to do is pick up the telephone and give us a call, and you can take advantage of his experience. The number, if you're in Champaign, Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. Also, we do have a toll-free line, and that means that if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number, and we'll pay for the call. And that is 800-222-9455. Once again, 333-WILL. That's for Champaign-Urbana, folks. And also toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Before we start, we want to remind you, Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors has provided some support for this Focus 580 program. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Welcome back.
Well, good morning. Good to be here.
We have several people ready to go already, so okay. We'll not make them wait. We'll start right in with a caller in St. Joe, and they are on line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a house that has lath and plaster walls, mm-hmm. and I'm being plagued with hairline cracks in the plaster. I had it replastered about 10 years ago, and they're reoccurring. Is there any way to cover those other than wallpaper?
Well, strictly speaking, probably not, in that there are some excellent substitutes for wallpaper that are better for the purpose.
Okay.
There are a couple of companies that make a very thin non-woven fiberglass scrim that goes on over it and ties everything together. You roll on a coat of adhesive, run this stuff into the adhesive, ground over again, and you end up with a nice smooth surface, but it's been fiberglass reinforced, so it stays there.
Super. And do you know what the product is called and the sources for it?
You probably can find some at the local paint stores. Uh-huh. If not, if you give me a call at my office, 356-5048, I can give you some trade names and this sort of thing. You'll also find it advertised in the Old House Journal, uh-huh. which is an excellent magazine if you have an old one you're trying to keep up.
Yeah, okay, very good. Okay, thanks, Hank.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So this is the product that also, if for example, in our house we have some rooms that where the walls are plastered, and the plaster's in pretty bad condition, it sounds like that might indeed be a good alternative to trying to patch plaster that's damaged if you have big pieces that are in bad shape, or there's even one place where we have a big piece that's missing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I would probably patch first, but... Okay. Basically, this stuff will provide you with a smooth surface to work with. It can be painted, papered, whatever. But you do have the fiberglass scrim reinforcing the top surface so you don't get this map cracking.
Okay. All right, very good. Let's continue to line number two in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Thanks for taking my call. First, a quick question on the previous question. That fiberglass scrim, would that leave joint lines visible, Hank?
Well, when you put it up, you lap the joints and then take a razor blade and cut them and then take the two little pieces out. So really you have very, very fine lines that would be, after it's painted, I don't think you'd ever see them.
Yeah, not at all like painting over wallpaper.
Right.
Okay.
Not at all.
My question is in regards to our summer project, tuck pointing our late 1920s foundation wall. It's brick. And, mm-hmm. I've just started reading up on that. It seems like a do-it-yourselfer if you take it careful. But for a house our age, need we be concerned about the actual mortar mix that we use?
Yes. You should be using Type O mortar. Now, the mortar that is sold for new construction today is Type M or N. You want Type O mortar.
But we will be able to find that in a premix?
Probably. Again, if not, I have the formula for making it up yourself, But I think you should be able to go to one of the masonry places, and they should be able to get type O mortar for you.
Now, is that a project that we could expect to do an hour or so each evening? Or my concern is that I don't know how much. Every time I mix up concrete or mortar, by the time I get it the right consistency, I have a lot more than I really need. So I'm concerned about whether I'll be able to do that on a...
Well, you'll have to pace yourself as to how big a batch you make. You have to try that for an evening or two and see just how much of it you can use in that period of time. But actually, you can use a fair amount of it if you've gone ahead with your preparation. In other words, rake out all the loose mortar and so on so you have relatively clean joints. If you have any extensive part of it, you ought to definitely get yourself a tuck-pointing trowel, which is a rather narrow thing that's used to push the mortar off the hawk into the joints. It's not at all like an ordinary trowel.
Yeah. I've begun collecting those tools. My main concern is I'm afraid that the mortar in some places is so loose that we may not have much control over how much mortar we actually take out.
Well, you don't want to rake it out much more than an inch deep.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. We'll give that a shot.
Okay. Thank you. So if you're doing this then and you do have a lot of loose mortar, you say don't rake it out more than an inch deep. If there's more, if you're leaving loose mortar in there, is that okay?
Yeah, it's surprising the bearing capacity. As long as you can keep the stuff from coming out of the joints, actually pure sand will hold the wall up. It's just a matter of keeping it there. And you don't have to dig out much, but you want a good inch of bearing at least. And since we're using type O mortar, it's a softer mortar than we use today, so that if it compresses a little bit, that's fine. Now, we would use type O mortar on anything that was built before World War II. If it was built before World War I, then we might consider a special mix, certainly if it was built before turn of the century. Mm-hmm. There are some special soft mortar mixes. I don't know if you can buy them pre-bagged, but again, I have formulas for them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can actually break the brick, because if the new mortar is much harder than the old mortar, any settlement that takes place will provide all the stress on the outside of the brick where the new mortar is, and you can actually break the brick. So that's the reason for the different types of mortar. The mortar that we used in the late 1800s was much softer, and so we want to replace it with something that isn't significantly harder than that was.
Are these the older mortars, are they similar to those that we use now in that the ingredients are the same and just the proportions
are different?
The ingredients
are the same, yes. Basically, it's a matter of they have more lime in them. Right. Than the mortars that we use today.
Okay. To our next caller, Savoy, line three. Hello.
Yes, hello. Mm-hmm. I have trouble with flooding in my basement every year. It happens at least once a year, and this year we actually had about 3 feet of standing water in our basement. Both times that they've flooded, you know, more than an inch or two, it's because the sump pump has failed. And this year I've installed a half horsepower sump pump instead of the normal one-third that I put in before when the sump pump failed. But what my question is I was wondering if it is possible to dig a second sump well in the basement of the house. It's about 4 years old, just to get some additional drainage, because the one sump pump never actually gets all the water out when it rains very heavily.
Well, it sounds to me like you better be doing something about where the water is coming from instead of worrying about getting it out once it's there. And in all probability, that has to do with the grading around the outside of your house. But, yes, you can certainly put in a second sump. It won't have the tiles going to it that your first one does. However, if you perforate the sides of it, it will tend to drain the gravel fill that should be under the slab.
Okay.
And you should put a layer of, let's call it landscape fabric, around the outside of this hole before you put the sump in it. so that it keeps any sand from washing into the sump. It lets the water through, but not the sand. Serves as a filter fabric. But I think you should be very concerned about where this is coming from.
Well, what happens is we have the drainage plug in our backyard, just outside of our yard, and there's a large field behind our house, and the water drains off of the field to the plug, but I'm not certain that the water is being carried from the plug anywhere, as we get sort of a lake out there that's, you know, a good foot and a half, 2 feet tall, high rather, and that's about the level of the basement. So,
okay, can you use some shallow swale to divert the water around your house and take it out to the street?
Well, it only collects in the backyard, which is about, and it collects about 25 to 30 feet behind our house.
Mm-hmm. But is the bottom of that swale where it is connecting lower than the street?
I'm not certain. I guess I'd have to actually do some sort of measurement to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I say, I would certainly be worried more about diverting the water around than pumping it out after it gets there. A sump pump cures a symptom, not a problem.
I see. Well, thank you very much. I'll let you go and talk to some other people, but it gives me some direction on what I should be doing.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
We are here this morning talking with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's with us every month. It's always a Monday, and we talk about home maintenance. And if you have questions, you can call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And next we'll be talking with someone in Danville, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. We just bought recently a brand-new home, and a one-story home. It's about 10 years old, and it needs some painting, staying on rough wood. We were thinking about doing this ourselves. Is that possible? How difficult?
Certainly.
Is that,
stain is very easy to apply.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as the surface is dry, do you know what kind of stain has been put on it in the past?
We don't quite know, but there is some moss on the side of the wall.
Okay. In that case, you can either get a power washer or you can scrub it down with a solution of about one part of household bleach to three or four parts of water. And scrub it down and then hose it down and let it dry. The bleach will kill the moss.
Oh.
And you should be...
1 to 4?
Yes, about that.
Ah, I see. And is there a primer that we ought to put on?
No. Stain doesn't need a primer.
So it's quite simple then.
Yes.
Do we need to brush paint or spray paint?
It can be either. What kind of is your siding? Is it just lap siding, or is it sheet siding, or what?
I do not know.
The main thing, and a lot of people that use spray follow it with a brush. They use a sprayer to put it on and a brush to make sure it gets everywhere, particularly on the bottom edges of the siding.
Oh, I see. Where underneath?
Yes.
Where it can't.
Where a spray would not normally get. You need to brush the most important thing to cover when painting or staining is the bottom edge.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Very good. You just, and that is just, you want to make sure that, because that's a place where moisture could.
Will wick in.
Get.
From the end.
So
right.
You want to make sure that gets that, painted
sure
or stained or whatever it is, you got to make sure you get covered.
Yeah, and it's the old bit, the if we're talking about ordinary lap siding, the taller the painter and the closer to the ground, the less gets on the bottom edge.
Right.
And we can see that when we inspect the house because the bottom edge, the bottom board is peeling and it works its way up. But as I say, that's the most important thing is really getting the bottom edge of the siding.
Okay, very good. To back here locally, Urbana, line 1. Hello.
Hello. I'm calling to ask a question about a window. The piece of wood that's underneath the sill, is that called the apron?
On the inside, yes.
On the inside of the house?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The reason I'm asking is I have a window in my kitchen where there are ants coming in at either end of this apron, and it's right over my kitchen sink. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, I can't seem to get them stopped coming in. I've used this tarot stuff to try and stop them, but they just keep coming in more and more. They like it. And so I was wondering, I think there is a nest of ants in the wall. And I was wondering if I can take that apron off. Can I put a pry bar in either end and get that off? And
yes, you'll want to start at the bottom because it may be interlocking with the sill a little bit. But yes, there's no reason why you can't take that off.
Okay. So start, the bottom, it's kind of hard to get to the bottom because it's really close to the...
Right close to the countertop.
Yeah.
Well, start at the ends, all right, but start at the bottom of the ends rather than the top.
Okay. And that, is that, would that be free from the sill?
Should be.
Should be. Okay. It's not up underneath the sill somewhere?
I don't think it... I never can outguess what somebody may have done, but in general, no.
Yeah, so you think it'd be okay to try that?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck. Let's go to Champagne, line two. Hello.
Hi, yeah, I have a house that was built in the early 60s, and so it doesn't have grounded outlets. And mm-hmm. I was wondering how difficult it would be to ground one of the outlets.
Well, you'll probably have to pull a new wire from that outlet all the way back to the box, to the service entrance.
Oh, okay. I don't even know how you would do that. I don't even have a basement, so.
Well, okay, but crawl space works fine.
I don't have a crawl space.
You have a slab.
Yeah.
In that case, the power is probably coming from the attic.
Oh.
And you can pull a wire up into the attic, you can hook into a ground if there is one up there. For something else, and there may be. Otherwise, you'd have to go again back to the service entrance box.
Okay.
But any good electrician can do this without any great deal of problem.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Very good. To Melford next on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm interested in a new roof for the house, and it's had a cement tile roof on it, but... built in 1928, and it's just it's just disintegrating, the cement tiles. And
mm-hmm.
I've heard about the an outfit called Met Tile that makes a steel tile that looks like a cement tile.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered if you have any information on that.
Pretty good product. Your cement tiles... are you sure they were original and not put on in the 1940s?
Oh, yes. My father built the house.
Okay.
And it's original tiles.
Okay.
1928.
Yeah. Cement asbestos, probably.
Well, they're not the clay tile, but they were cement.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun has just gotten to them, you know.
Well, yeah. Everything wears out eventually.
Oh, yeah.
So, I would say that there would be no problem. You're going to have to take the old ones off.
I just wondered where is there anybody in Champaign would handle that kind of stuff? That's what I'm looking for.
Don't know. I probably have literature on it where you could go back to the factory, but I don't have anything at the top of
mind. You're not familiar with it, then?
I have seen it.
Have you? Uh-huh.
Because I have seen it at the builder shows and so on, and I tend to collect lots of literature that way. But...
I've been up in Duluth and have a daughter who lives up there, and they're just putting them on like crazy up there.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
very very nice looking, and this is a brick colonial, and they're very attractive, and they're supposed to have good durability too.
Yeah, well,
but I can't. I haven't found anybody around here that handles that thing.
Well, I'm. If you will. Leave your phone number with the person on the phone out here. I will see if I can find a company address or something of that sort for you.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, very good.
We'll put you back on hold here, and then Brian Wagner, the fellow who took the call, he will take your name and number, and we'll provide that for Hank. And then, of course, anybody else here who's listening this morning and got questions, this is our monthly visit with Hank Spies. He is here, and we talk about home maintenance issues. If something needs to be fixed, you're thinking about making some changes, doing remodeling, you have some sort of problem, you're not quite sure how to approach it, you can call in and talk with Hank about it. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Pretty soon here, I guess we'll be getting into some weather where we can do some painting. I'm sure I've asked you this 100 times, but I'll do it again. One of the things that you need to keep in mind is the temperature.
Yes, and we don't like to do painting when the nighttime temperature goes below 50. But and the really main thing is that the surface be dry.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, yes, on a latex paint, this is less important, perhaps. But in order to cure properly, we really need to have reasonable temperatures. So if the nighttime goes below, and they're talking about snow flurries tonight, so today's not a good day.
Not a good day. So one good reason you could say, no, I could put that, that project back, at least for a couple of weeks.
Back to the couch.
Yeah. All right. Very good. But other than that, you want to make sure that the surface is dry and clean, obviously. Mm-hmm. You don't want anything on there because the paint will stick to that. But then if that comes off.
Yes, exactly.
You're in trouble. Anything else in terms of surface prep that you think is good to think about?
Well, if you are in a situation where you take it down to bare wood, within a couple of hours of the time that you were going to paint it, if you just touch sand it, otherwise the sunlight will deteriorate the cells on the surface of the wood, and the paint will stick to them, and they may not stick to what the wood that they were a part of. So if you just very lightly touch sand it, mm-hmm. within, say, a couple of hours of the time that it's going to be painted, we find that the paint sticks a lot better. And that's one thing that half the painters that I know have never heard of this thing, but when you stop and think about what's going on with the ultraviolet light from the sun deteriorating the cells on the surface of the wood, it makes perfectly good sense.
Right. Okay. We're already here at our midpoint. Maybe I'll just mention again our guest, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. It's our regular monthly show on home maintenance. If you have questions, I know he'll do his best to help you out. The number for Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL or 9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-WILL. Several callers here back in Champaign for our next person, line number one. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
We were out of town last week, and we returned to discover that some of the shingles had blown off of our roof on our 8-year-old house. This is obviously disconcerting to me. I was wondering, is this a sign of shoddy workmanship in the original construction of the roof? And I have contacted a roofer for an estimate. Can you give me some advice on how to select a roofer and how to proceed?
Well, basically you want somebody who has a good reputation, been around for a while, this sort of thing. But in all probability, I wouldn't attribute to shoddy workmanship. It may be attributed to the time of the year at which the roof was put on. See, the shingles have an adhesive strip on them, mm-hmm. and this adhesive is activated by sunlight and outdoor temperature. So if you get a roof that was put on in October or November, it's far less likely to stick down than it is if it was put on in the middle of the summer. Obviously, we can't do all our shingling in the middle of the summer.
Well, it was constructed in the spring and in the summer, so.
Yeah, and if you didn't get enough heat to set that adhesive, particularly when we're talking about spring, as the winds come up, we get all this beautiful blowing dust around here. And you get a coating of dust on the adhesive, and then it will never stick.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you get the dust on it before right. before it gets warm enough to activate the adhesive, it's not going to hold.
I see.
Now, a lot depends on exactly where the nails are in the shingle. Again, probably half of the roofs that we look at are not properly nailed.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that this is necessarily the problem in your case. Mm-hmm. It could be, but the nail is supposed to be just below the adhesive line, yeah. And an awful lot of roofers tend to put it either in or above the adhesive line, and that does not hold as well.
Right.
Now, the other thing is we have had some pretty extensive winds lately. If you check with the weather service, I mean, I don't know if it's out at the airport or whatever, generally speaking, if the wind is over 50 miles an hour, this should be covered with your homeowner's insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Because shingles are guaranteed to be hang on at 50 miles an hour, generally speaking, but when the wind exceeds that, they may not.
I see.
So yours is not the only one I've heard about blowing off last week.
No. Mother Nature is wonderful.
Oh, yes, yes. If you don't like Central Illinois weather, wait a few minutes, it'll change.
That's right. That's right. It would now, given, I don't know, there are a half dozen shingles that blew off, do I have to worry about the whole roof or just...
No, you can repair, and they can glue them down with some roofing cement. They'll glue the tabs down.
So probably just taking care of the ones that blew off. I don't
yes.
necessarily have to worry about the rest of the roof.
Right. 8 years, you should have another 10 left at least.
I hope so. Well, thank you, Hank.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Let's go to another Champagne caller. This is line number two. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a gas furnace that was installed, maybe about 1970. And if it had a manual that came with it, the previous owner of the house didn't pass it on to me. I was wondering if there's, a popular book someone might have written or something like that that would give general advice on how to maintain a furnace of that vintage.
Well, probably you should have a service person check it a minimum of every 2 years, preferably every year, and keep it in adjustment. You're at such an age where it would not be at all surprising to find a crack in the heat exchanger or something of this sort.
Mm-hmm.
You probably are looking at an efficiency of about 60%, whereas the new furnace would have a minimum by federal requirement of 78%. So if they find much of anything wrong with it, throw it away, even if it is working reasonably well, because with the fuel prices now, it's questionable as to whether we can afford to keep a furnace of that efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But no, I don't know of any book that's going to tell you what to look for, how to adjust. Generally speaking, if you look at it when the flame is going, if the flame is basically blue with not more than about 10% of yellow in it, it's adjusted pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It a lot depends on what the setting is on your blower as to how warm the air is when it comes out and when it's shutting down.
What do you mean the setting on the blower?
Well, there is a thermostat on the side of the furnace that is set as to what temperature inside the furnace the blower starts and what temperature it shuts off.
I see.
And generally speaking, we want it to kick in when it gets about 120 degrees in the bonnet and shut off when it gets down to about 110.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which means that in really cold weather, it will never shut off.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And that's a sign of a properly sized furnace, actually. If it's below freezing outside, probably the blower will never turn off.
If it's below freezing?
Yes.
There's a lot of distance between 30 degrees and 20 below, which we sometimes get around here.
Well, okay, if it's below 30 degrees, the blower should probably never shut off. The furnace will, burner will, but not the blower.
I see.
And most furnaces are significantly oversized, which means they will cycle down to about zero. But as I say, if you set it so it kicks in at about 120 and drops out at 110, this tends to keep from giving you a cold blast of air when the thing starts up, and so on. That's one reason they set the furnace so it will run almost continuously, is so that when the blower starts, we don't have all the cold air that was in the ductwork blasting out at you and giving you a cold draft till everything warms up.
Uh-huh. Okay. Very interesting. I try to do as much of this sort of thing as I can myself. To look for the hairline cracks, so I imagine you need some sort of instrument.
Well, generally speaking, a good flashlight and a mirror.
You can hold in your hand?
Well, the one with an extension on it so you can stick it in there and see the inside of this thing and see if there's any cracks. We do use an instrument. We use an ultrasonic generator that we put in the combustion chamber and then a receiver, and we check the register outlets to see if there's any of this very high-frequency sound coming through. If it is, this would be a sign of a crack. Generally speaking, it's somewhat above a dog whistle. It's nothing you can hear, but we do have this generator that we put in there.
Okay, that would be something that a professional would use.
They might.
Okay, and the cracks one would look for are ones that one would be able to see?
Yeah, usually you can see a hairline discoloration of some variety.
I see. Very good. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Savoy for somebody else here, line number 3. Hello.
Hello there. I have a 18-foot garage door, and right in the middle, when we have a good rain or rain with the wind out of the east, I get a pool of water inside the door that pools, so might get a quarter inch deep. And I was wondering if there's some way of raising the concrete or filling in that little depression that would hold. Most of them just crack right out of there.
Well, there are some epoxy concretes that you can use that won't crack out, but I really question whether it's worth worrying about or not.
Oh, I see.
The other thing is it's coming in probably. There is a joint in the flashing at the top of the door where the siding is flashed to the door trim, and that's probably where the water's coming from.
Yeah, it comes in right in the middle.
Well, see, they probably didn't have an 18-foot-long piece of flashing, so they spliced it in the middle.
And,
so you might try checking that flashing above the garage door and see whether there isn't a joint about there.
Okay, I will. Now, also, on the bottom of the door is this sealer. Of course, it's about 10 years old now, I guess.
Right.
That is like a... hose, you know, open hose, and it comes down and compresses.
Right.
So I was wondering maybe if I put a new one of those on there.
Well, if it's blowing under, that would be a possibility. It all depends
on... It's right in the middle.
It all depends. Usually you should be able to close the door and look from the inside and see if you see any light under it. If you do, then yes, perhaps you need to do something with wet weather strip. You can either replace the weather strip or you can take it off and shim it a little bit in that area, put a thin slat on the bottom of the door, and then reattach the weather strip and see if that won't bring it down.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, very good. We'll keep on here to, Washington, Illinois is the next caller. That's line 4. Hello.
Hello. I'm calling about termites. The house I live in, I bought about 1970. It was built about 1940. And it was treated for termites about 1965 and was inspected yearly thereafter for a while. But I haven't had it inspected, say, for 25 years. I assume I need to have it inspected. How do I go about finding a good, competent inspector?
Well, basically, you're going to need some local pest control operator to do the inspection. If it was treated in 1965, the treatment of choice would have been chlordane. Probably you don't have any termites yet, in that the effective life of chlordane is in excess of 40 years. So if they did the job right, it's probably still keeping them out.
But you think I should have it inspected?
I think it would still be a good idea to have it inspected, yes. And as I say, you'd be looking for a local pest control operator. Check your phone book and see who you've got, or
Or maybe just use the people who treated it back in 1965, if they're still
if they're still around, that would be fine.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Next is caller here in Southern Illinois, line one. Hello.
Hi. A friend of mine is had a business with a concrete floor, and she painted the floor with oil-based paint, and it's sweating now. Is there any way to help that not sweat?
Keep it heated.
Keep it heated. Keep it at a constant temperature then, huh?
Yeah, because what's happening is you are the ground surface under there is cooler at this time of year when the humidity is high and somewhat warm. You will get some condensation on the surface. And the only way you can really keep that from happening is to make sure that that slab doesn't get cold in the wintertime.
Okay.
And I presume that this was not a heated space.
It hasn't been. No, it was an empty building that they're renovating.
Okay. If it's heated during the winter, this won't happen. If it isn't, there's nothing you can put on it that will keep it from happening in the spring.
Okay. And the last caller about the termites, is there a non-toxic, environmentally safe termite control that they put on now?
Yeah, it's called a hammer.
Can you spell that?
In other words, you haul up.
Mr. Spies is joking.
But there isn't anything that's not toxic?
Okay. There is a system currently available called the Centricon system.
Centricon?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This consists, the pest control operator comes out and puts a series of wood stakes around the outside of your house, enclosed in a plastic sleeve with cracks in it so the termites can get in.
Mm-hmm.
They come around every month or two and check and see whether any termite has actually attacked one of their stakes.
What's that, like something that would lure them in?
Well, no, it's just plain wood.
Oh, the wood, okay.
Plain old wet wood lures them very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
If they find that the termites have indeed attacked one of their stakes, they replace that with a stake containing a hormone, a growth hormone for the termites.
Okay.
The termite eats this, hauls it back to his colony, and so on. And this hormone prevents them from shedding their shell. And being an insect, in order to grow, a termite has to be able to shed its shell.
Mm-hmm.
So this will eventually, within, say, 6 months or so, kill off the entire colony because they can no longer grow.
Okay.
Now,
do you have to keep repeating that? Like,
well, as I say, you'll check it. They check about monthly, and you can be sure if they come out every month, this isn't going to be inexpensive.
All right.
But that is the latest system for controlling termites without using any soil poisoning.
But a homeowner can't go to a hardware store or anything and buy this?
No.
Okay.
Only sold through pest control operators.
All right. Well, thank you, Hank.
Okay. Very good. About 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Hank Spies. He's here every month. We do the show on home maintenance. If you have questions, call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455.
You don't like to clobber termites with a hammer?
Well, I can't think of other ways that I would like to spend my time.
Right.
But that is a very direct method.
Yes.
It requires a technology that anyone could obtain and use.
Right.
The problem, though, is that they don't like to come out in the open air, really. They like to maintain their humidity level. That's why one of the things you look for is those little tunnels on the side of your house, because they don't like to be outside.
You're right.
But, yeah, I'm sure that that method is effective for many types of insects.
Absolutely.
And I know that many of the hardware stores around town have hammers available. So
yes.
If people want to try that, that's up to them. All right. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Back, I guess I was thinking about the furnace issue. I'm sure that there are a lot of people, after the winter that we've had and the cost of natural gas, who will probably be thinking about whether or not they might want to replace their furnace.
Mm-hmm.
If particularly if they have an older furnace and they don't have any they don't have an owner's manual. They don't have material with it. Is there any way to determine what the efficiency level of the furnace you have is?
Not easily, no. We tend to go by design type. And generally speaking, anything that was built 30 years ago, if we're on a good day, we're between 55 and 60%. If we have one of the old monsters left in the old octopus type and so on, the efficiency may well be in the 30 to 40% range. So now if you have one that was built in the last 20 years, you're probably up in the 65 to 70. If you have one that has an induced draft fan on it, you're probably at 78 to 80. And that is the federal minimum at the moment is 78%. So if you have one of these old monsters, I don't care whether it works or not, you can't afford to keep it.
Yeah, right.
The only thing you can afford to do with it is throw it away.
Okay, and I expect that summertime probably is the time that that's you want to get your furnace in the summer and your air conditioning in the winter.
Yeah, right? Well, you're probably going to want this furnace about midsummer because the same guy that puts in air conditioning also puts in the furnaces, and he's going to be busier than heck in the springtime when the summer is just beginning.
Air conditioning.
Yeah, okay. Late summer is a great time for furnaces.
Well, that'll give you some opportunity to do research and figure out what you want to do. All right. A couple of other folks here. Charleston is next, line four. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
I was wondering, any information about how to take care of the discoloration in the asphalt shingles on a perfectly good roof?
Okay, what's the discoloration?
It's a dark streaking. I think it's probably an algal growth that occurs on the north-facing and west-facing portions of roofs, generally light-colored, gray-colored roofs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, basically it's mildew growth.
Okay.
And, yes, you can spray it down with, again, this universal killer of assorted things, about one part of household bleach to four parts of water. However, be sure and catch the runoff from the downspouts if you get carried away with this because it will kill plants.
Uh-huh.
But that will probably help now. That will help eliminate from now to help keep it from growing. There is a product on the market called Shingle Shield. This is basically a strip of zinc, about 3 inches wide, something like that, which you tuck under the flap of the top row of shingles.
Uh-huh.
The acid rain that we get will produce enough zinc oxide, which will wash down the roof and keep the stuff killed off. So,
and does the application of the 1-to-4 measure require any pressure spray?
No, you can do it garden spray or whatever.
Uh-huh. And that'll break it loose.
That will kill the mildew, and then it will probably wash off.
Very good. I thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. To Downers Grove next, line one. Hello.
Yeah. Good morning.
Yes.
This is Joe. My question is, we have a 6-flat, and the problem is the ventilation and the both front and back of the building. We have a sliding door, a sliding window between the apartments, between the upper and lower floor.
Mm-hmm.
But the tenants, they leave it always open, and obviously it started raining in on the floor. And I was thinking about putting a ventilation in the ceiling, you know, like they have in greenhouses, something like that. But I never heard anybody doing it. Did you hear anything about it, or is there a way of doing it?
Well, you certainly can put an exhaust fan, which will provide the air circulation. That's not a problem. You know, the so-called whole house ceiling fan.
I see.
You can do that and exhaust it through the attic or something of that sort. And that way, any window that you open, you will have a breeze because you're pulling air out.
Yes.
And short of nailing the window shut, I've never found anything that would keep tenants from leaving windows open.
That's a problem, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
What about the wintertime? Would it work in the winter? I mean, does it shut properly?
Yes, there are a number of them that that close very tightly in the wintertime.
Thanks very much.
Probably the brand that I'm familiar with that closes automatically, tightly, the best is by Tamarack Technology.
Yeah, what's the name again?
Tamarack Technology.
Could I find it on the computer or?
Well, I've never tried, but I suspect so.
I see. Well, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. One more here to Champagne, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a new TimberTech deck that was put in last fall, and now it's time to stain it. And I'm wondering, Hank, if you could recommend a category of stain for that type of material, which, of course, is a plastic wood composite.
Sorry, no, I can't. I've not had to face that particular problem.
Okay.
The plastic wood composite, I'm not sure you have to do anything to them.
No, indeed you don't, but you can shift the color a little bit by staining, but no one seems to know quite what type of stain to use.
Okay, I have sources that I can call to find out that, but offhand I can't give you an answer.
Well, I guess TimberTech has a webpage, so I'll look them up and see what I can find.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, at that, I think we're about at the end of the time, with the promise, though, that our guest, Hank Spies, will be back again next month, and we will do it again. So I say thanks very much.
Okay, you're quite welcome.
Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service, always with us here once a month. On a Monday, we do these shows on home maintenance. And again, as I say, he'll be back again next month, and we'd be happy to have your questions then.